Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hi, everybody. I am very excited because I am having a returning guest, which means we had a good time the first time, and now we're going to have a good time the second time. Her name is Laura Stevens, and she's joining me today. Lauren is the president of Write Wisdom. It's a professional ghostwriting company and Bright Star Memoirs. She's also the author of All Sorrows Can Be Born. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you, Marcia. I'm delighted to be here, to be invited back to your show today. It's very exciting that we get to reconnect. I think we spoke pre-COVID, so now we're post-COVID.
Exactly. And where does the time go, my goodness? So for those folks that missed our first podcast together, why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself?
I've had a rather eclectic career. First paying gig was as an economics editor at Houghton Mifflin Publishing Company in Boston. And I went from there to working for a mortgage banking firm in Boston. I was hired to write the offering memoranda that would go out to potential folks who would provide money for large-scale projects. And I really took to that job like a duck to water and ended up being senior vice president of the company and traveled all over the United States, which was extremely exciting, a little fatiguing, but very, very exciting. I trained some of my team on how to do credit analysis. It sounds boring, but it wasn't. And what was the most exciting part was I made a lot of money, which...
Well, there you go.
which doesn't hurt either. I remember my first Christmas there, my Christmas bonus was equal to my full year salary, which was quite an amazing accomplishment, and also goes to my former boss, who was so generous to me. You know, I didn't realize that things like that could actually happen. But because we were dealing with such large projects, you know, he was able to be that generous. And I worked there for 8 years and then pivoted, moved to California, and I focused on producing live theater and docudramas, which really taught me the craft of storytelling, what it means to find the nuggets of a compelling, dramatic story. I worked as the executive producer. I was brought on board because, again, of my ability to raise money. And so I was very popular with independent producers and directors who were trying to, you know, find a way to support their particular projects. And I did that for a number of years, worked with PBS on documentaries and docudramas, which was so exciting. Met some fantastic people like Julie Harris and Roscoe Lee Brown and Burt Lancaster and whatever. It was, you know, it was a dream job, quite honestly. But what I found was that being in the film business, you don't necessarily get paid very well, and I had a family to support. So I pivoted again and went into fundraising for a not-for-profit company in the human rights arena, where my heart was really engaged, and worked there for almost 15 years. Met some fantastic people, colleagues, donors, and what that led to was I decided I wanted to write my mother's life story. This was while I was still working in the nonprofit sector. And I spent 3 years interviewing her, gathering the bits and pieces of her life. She was an opera singer, a collector of pre-Columbian art, as well as a mother and a housewife, and how she managed to sort of do all of that. She was also a member of the Women Geographers Association, which was started by Margaret Mead many, many years ago. And one of the prerequisites to belonging was that you had to have traveled in at least 40 countries, which she had.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
And so that you had a specialty, and hers was pre-Columbian art, which she studied at Columbia University and at Yale. So I got finished with her book, which was called I Turned a Key and the Birds Began to Sing, which was a reference to her career as an opera singer. And it was such a joy to do this, to create a memoir for her. And she so loved sharing her book with other people, which I was able to publish, that I thought to myself, you know what, this could be a business. I'd never even heard of ghostwriting. I mean, I think I might have run across the term once or twice, but it certainly wasn't popular, which is the way it is today. This was about 15 years ago. And I had the wherewithal to do this without a net. I sort of jumped into this whole new venture.
Oh, love it.
And formed a company called Right Wisdom, and announced to my donors that I was going to be going into the ghostwriting business, and if they had a book that they were interested in writing, whether it was a memoir or an inspirational story or an origin story about the how they founded their company, that I could be their pen, that I could be the person who would, you know, put down on the page what they were thinking about and what the lessons were that they learned from a life well lived. And so my first clients were my donors, which was just an amazing marriage, you know, between my past and my present. And it took off like a rocket ship.
Wow.
I had intimate relationships with so many of these people who shared with me what their personal passions were, why they were involved in my nonprofit organization, you know, what made them get up in the morning and want to make a difference in the world. And that connection, you know, started the ball rolling. And since that time, I've written 40-plus books. I organized a group of journalists who work with me, who some of whom have a specialty in a particular area, others of whom are more generalists. And our books are all different genres. If you go on my website, which is Write Wisdom, WriteWisdom.com, you know, you'll see just the broad range of books that we have done for our many author clients. And it's just been a pleasure, you know, doing this for other people. I get to help fulfill what their dreams are. I mean, so many people have had the idea of writing a book, but they just haven't had the discipline or the time or the craft
expertise
that it takes to write,
right,
you know, a compelling page turner.
Sure.
And so that's really where we come in.
Well, I think that this is really great. And for those of you, I just want to spell Lauren's name for you, because not everybody spells Stevens the same way. So Lauren is L-O-R-E-N, and her last name is spelled STEPHENS.com. Anyway, but you'll find that this beautiful rightwisdom.com website, which I'm looking at right now, frankly, is just phenomenal. When did you start this?
I officially hung up my shingle in, I think, 2007, 2008. And we've really been going strong even during the pandemic. There were lots of people who were not working at that time, you know, had time and space to focus on something that they had always wanted to do. And so we had more inquiries during that time period probably than ever before, which was, of course, a very lucky situation. Mm-hmm. Many other people can't say the same thing. The other thing I will tell you about COVID is that people got used to speaking to people via Zoom. You know, they
yes.
didn't really feel that they needed to be in the room where it was happening, to borrow a phrase from Hamilton, mm-hmm. you know, you didn't have to be in the room. And so quite a few of our books have been written, and we've never met those clients, which is,
wow.
in one sense, it's marvelous because I can work anywhere in the country, you know, if we both have the same general computers to talk to each other.
Technology, sure.
Yeah. The sad part is, of course, that I love all my clients and I want to meet them, and I'm hoping someday that I will.
Sure. I get, well, you know what? You're very personable. And yes, you know, we're all familiar with Zoom, from our doctors to our family to our businesses. You know, a lot
right.
of people use Zoom for a variety of reasons. But I think what you offer is pretty amazing. And because you are offering professional ghostwriting services, I'm a person that likes definitions in life, and that's why I guess I'm a podcaster, because I ask a lot of questions. So for those that maybe don't know, would you define what ghostwriting actually means?
Mm-hmm. Ghostwriting means that you help someone else write their book. Whether it's a company profile or a memoir or an autobiography. And now what has happened, which is so interesting, people have started hiring ghostwriters to help them write novels, which was not the case when I first started my company, but is so today, whether they're historical novels, typically based on something in that person's life. You might be surprised to know that probably 70% of books written by, you know, bold-faced names are ghostwritten. And usually,
really?
Yes, and usually in the acknowledgement section, it will say something like, if it weren't for so-and-so, this book would never have happened. Well, what they're really saying to you is that person helped them write their book.
Fascinating.
And what I will say is probably 20 years ago, ghostwriters might have sort of been looked down upon, or if you hired a ghostwriter, perhaps that was the case. But it's not so today, and it's almost expected, because think about it. The people who have these enormous, fascinating lives simply do not have the time that it takes
mm-hmm.
to write a book. But if they have someone that they can talk to, that they can be interviewed by,
mm-hmm.
will then take all that material and organize it and write two drafts and a polish, or three drafts and a polish, and they'll, of course, approve everything that goes into the book, that's
mm-hmm.
that's far less daunting than thinking
yes.
about, you know, sitting in your office all by yourself, staring at the cursor blinking on the on the screen,
oh.
you know, and sort of saying, come on, you know, get down to
it's
business
funny.
Here.
It's interesting because, just to interrupt just for a moment, I have a lot of writers that come on my podcast, and I oftentimes have them take us through their experience with writing, and do they keep a notebook by their bed and journal? Do they write just words that maybe will come back to them and mean something? So everybody has their different style, and I can see where ghostwriting is really advantageous. I'd like to know, what's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography?
Mm-hmm. With an autobiography, typically you are writing your entire life story from the day you're born till where you happen to be at a particular moment in time. In the case of a memoir, it might be a slice of life. It's probably more introspective. You're trying to help the reader understand the emotional content of what it is that you're going through. For example, a difficult divorce, or climbing Mount Everest, or going down the Amazon. Whereas an autobiography is usually, it's much longer. For example,
mm-hmm.
Catherine Graham, who was the owner and editor-in-chief of the Washington Post and took on that job after her husband passed away, Catherine Graham had 200 researchers working with her on her book.
Wow.
Every single line was fact-checked for accuracy. I'm not saying that with a memoir you shouldn't try and be accurate, because
mm-hmm.
it's not fiction. It is hopefully your recollection. You're relying on your memory, and of course you can also fact check. But it's a different endeavor. We do have people who come to us who clearly want to write an autobiography, which is fine. But we love the memoir genre for sure.
Go ahead. Go on. Yes, you wanted to finish that thought, please.
Have I answered your question accurately?
Yes.
Okay.
You have, because frankly, people have asked me, have I ever thought about writing a memoir?
Mm-hmm.
Because of my lifestyle and the sudden passing of my husband, and how did I go forward when that happened? So it's interesting how I'm processing what you're saying. What are some of the reasons that your author or your clients, why do they want to write their, what are the reasons for writing their memoirs?
There are many, many different reasons. One is they may want to leave a legacy for their children and their grandchildren, to
mm-hmm.
give them a sense of where they came from. You know, for example, Henry Louis Gates's book, you know, or not book, but his program. It's such a fascinating enterprise. People are so surprised when they hear about, you know, the information that is unearthed through archival records and so forth. And so many of our authors want to share their life experience so that their children and grandchildren have a firmer foundation
mm-hmm.
as they go through their own lives. I can tell you that when I finished my mother's memoir, my son said to me, gee, I wish I had known some of the things that are in grandma's book. That I didn't know about. So
mm-hmm.
just in my own family, I see the power of writing a memoir. Other people write it for business reasons. One client that we had, they own a company called Wiener Schnitzel. I don't know if you're familiar with
them. Yep, we have those here. You sure?
Yeah, but they're the largest buyers of Frankfurters in the United States, and they have over 300 drive-thrus throughout the country. And John Gilardi started the company. He had worked for Glenn Bell, who started Taco Bell. and he decided that he was going to go off on his own. And Glenn said to him, you can do whatever you want, just don't sell hamburgers. So John said, okay, I'll sell hot dogs. And he created a delicious kind of chili sauce that went on top of the hot dogs, and he was off to the races.
Wow.
After he passed away, his ex-wife took over the company, and his their son is the head of marketing, and they have turned it into a real juggernaut. And Cindy, his former wife, wanted to write a book as a tribute to John, but more than that, which is so clever, she wanted to have a book that she could give to all of the franchisees who were part of the Wiener Schnitzel system so that they would know what was the origin story of the company that they were about to work for, what the values of the company was, how John got started, the ups and downs of the business, how it almost went into bankruptcy, how it ended up where it is today. It's a table book with gorgeous photographs, wonderful text, and it's very engaging. They also distributed it to their vendors, you know, the Frankfurter companies that they bought the Frankfurters from. They bought Tasty Freeze, so they gave it to all the Tasty Freeze franchisees. So they used it as a real promotion for the company. Another use can be that you're a public speaker, that you have something interesting to talk about in your field of endeavor, and having a book that you can sell or distribute to people who come to hear you speak is a wonderful way to create more of a link to someone else. And I heard a wonderful expression, which is, it's a motivator to come to the front of the room. Let's say you're in the audience and you're listening to Jeff Pink, who is the CEO of Orly International. We did his book. So you're in the audience. You want to know more about Orly. Maybe you want to become a distributor for Orly. So you come to the front of the room, and there's Mr. Pink with his book, you know, from the original French manicure to global beauty brand. And that's the title of his book. And he uses that whenever he speaks to people. He also uses it for his representatives in 47 countries around the world.
Wow.
So each person has a particular reason why they want to write a book. As I mentioned, right now we're in the world of historical novels. I'm just amazed. We just completed our third historical novel. And my client promises me that once the book is out, which it will be out June 4th, he's going to give me a little more of a peek into who some of the people are in the book that, you know, are the inspirations for his main characters. Right now, I don't know. We've together shaped the book. It takes place in the 50s and 60s in tobacco country in North Carolina, which was an extremely tumultuous period in terms of the civil rights movement, in terms of just in the tobacco industry, as the Surgeon General issued their proclamation that, you know, tobacco causes cancer. And so my job with my client was to do an enormous amount of research in this case, which is something I absolutely love. You cannot be a ghostwriter if you don't like to do research, you know, because you want to paint a picture of a particular period of time that may be unfamiliar to your reader, and that also brings the story much more to life. And my problem is I sometimes go down the rabbit hole because I get so interested in something that, you know, 3 hours will go by and I'm still jumping around looking at material. And maybe, one sentence will step in the book. actually, but I've had all of that research that is kind of the foundation for that sentence that I can, you know, stand behind.
That makes sense. So could you just briefly take us through the process that you go through to shape
mm-hmm.
those stories and find those golden nuggets that you mentioned before that make
yes.
for a fascinating read?
Yes. Well, you know, and this is my process and the process that my colleagues on my team go through. Everybody may have a different sort of a process when they write a book for someone. And I like to frame it in terms of a collaboration, which it really
mm-hmm.
is. You know, without a story there or an idea, without someone who's passionate about getting something down on the paper, it's just not going to happen. And so it is truly a collaboration. But the way we work is we have an initial meeting where we'll create a chronological roadmap, you know, of important events in a person's life, dates and that sort of thing, sort of the, you know, the nitty-gritty of it.
Sure.
We then do 10 two-hour interviews, which are then transcribed, and we ask our author clients to review the transcriptions for accuracy and if it also triggers more stories. At that point, we will write a first draft. We will gather comment. My author might say, oh, gee, I forgot to tell you this story or that story, and that happens, believe me, all the time.
Yeah. Because it triggers ideas, right? You hadn't thought of that. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
And by the way, when I'm interviewing someone, I try not to cut them off because
mm-hmm.
they may be wandering a little bit, you know, but they may then end up in a place that's so interesting that I hadn't even expected. On the other hand, there are times when I have to pull the reins in a little bit because, you know, we only have so much time on this earth,
mm-hmm.
as it were. So
oh, that's cute.
Usually it's two drafts and then a polish. A polish is when you are kind of, you know, polishing the manuscript so that it sparkles like a diamond. And at that point, the manuscript is sometimes submitted to a few very close people who are friends of the author or who are experts in a particular field just to make sure that, you know, we've covered our bases and if we start hearing the same feedback from, let's say, three people, and we call them beta readers. These are people who we engage to read what the manuscript is. If we start getting the same feedback, for example, the character of Claire is not really well developed, or I don't understand this particular point, or this scene doesn't work for me, then it's our job to go back in and figure out what needs to be tweaked so that we are responsive to a potential reader. Once the manuscript is finished, oftentimes, our authors will want to have photographs included, which are always fantastic. I usually recommend between 40 to 50 photographs from their personal collections that are relevant to the text. When you're doing a project for someone who's you know, like in their late 80s, we just finished a book for a Holocaust survivor. You know, a lot of it is archival material. The quality may not be that great, but the image is amazing. So you'll include it even if, you know, you look at it and it's not quite as sharp as, you know, one would normally expect a photograph mm-hmm. in a book to be. Once that has been accomplished, and almost always, except for the historical novels, all of our books do have photographs. And again, I love doing them. I love captioning them. you know, figuring out where they should go in the book. People always flip through a book, and the first thing they do is, well, the first thing they do is look for their name in the book. I guarantee you, where am I in your story?
Well, that's funny.
That is, if they're part of the family or, you know, a close colleague or whatever. And the second thing they do is, you know, they look at the photographs because those are very enticing, and they give you a kind of visual sense of the roadmap that you're going to be following along in the book. Once that's accomplished, then the question becomes, how does the book get published? And today there are so many different ways that books are published, from self-publishing to hybrid publishers to boutique presses to the Big Five, which are the sort of major publishing companies that only, you know, the top-tier manuscripts ever get attention, which is not to say that a book that is published by a boutique press or a hybrid press can't have a lot of attention. And so not only do we advise them, our clients, on, you know, what we think is the best way to get their book published, but one thing I always, always, always impress on them is the importance of hiring a book publicist, because they're the ones who really help to bring attention to a book through the use of social media, through podcasts like yours, through interviews, and they should be so lucky that they get on television on Good Morning America or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, you always sort of put a list together of the outlets that you really, you know, would dream about being part of. I'll never forget when I met Mitch Albom, who wrote Tuesdays with Maury.
Right.
I don't know if you've read that book.
I'm familiar with that book,
We were at the Sun Valley Writers Conference in Idaho, and he was there to talk about that book. And he told an anecdote in which he said that his publicist learned that he was being selected by Oprah Winfrey to be recommended the book. And the only thing that the person who made that call said to his publicist was, how many copies are you publishing of the book? And I don't know what they said to him, 5,000 copies or 10,000 copies. They said, you better publish 250,000. So there are people who, you know, create a tsunami if they give your book, you know, a high five, as it were. What's interesting, too, is more and more celebrities are creating their own book clubs. I'm sure you've seen, you know, Jenna's book club and Reese Witherspoon's book club and so on and so on. What you may not know is that you cannot submit your book for consideration. They have to come to you. So you can Yeah, so you can do everything in the world, stand on your head, you know, go to her door, throw the book in the window, I don't know what. But they're not going to pay attention to it. They have a raft of people who are reading, you know, books in galley form months in advance of your book coming out and deciding if this is a book that they want to recommend to their, you know, to their followers.
I see. Well, I'm curious, typically, and I know that it can change from person to person, but typically, how long does it take to complete a memoir manuscript?
You're absolutely right. It depends from person to person. I like to say that it's 9 months to a year from the first engagement to the completion, but things happen. And very often the momentum is broken because someone has to go out of town, there's a business emergency, someone gets sick. You know, there are all kinds of reasons why that happens. And so you don't always stay on task because there are there are incidents that happen.
Sure.
I would love it if it was true that we could get, you know, from beginning to end without interruption, but it almost never happens that way.
Do you recommend that others read their manuscript before they lock it down?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything in a book written by a ghostwriter is a reflection of something that the author has wanted to explore or has approved of.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, when I finished with a book, maybe 2 years out, you know, after it's out, I'll look at it, and I can't tell you which is exactly a line that was written by my author and which is a line that was written by me.
That's funny.
Which is kind of crazy, but it's true.
So just to kind of piggyback on what you've just said, so I'm writing my life story. I'm writing about my memoir, and I'm working with your company, and I'm writing about, you know, how I met my husband and blah, 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 my life story. Do you get credit on the back of that novel as being part of that?
In your case, it's a memoir, as you've described it. And we have a contractual arrangement with all of our author clients that at a minimum we get acknowledged in the acknowledgement section. And sometimes our name is on the cover. I just finished a book called We're Live in Five, My Extraordinary Life in Television by Jeff Margolis with Lauren Stevens. And in that particular book project, Jeff wanted to give me a cover credit, which was very generous of him. You know, we were in a very close partnership to get that book done. It was a joy to work with Jeff. You may not recognize his name, but he's produced the he's directed the Oscars 8 times, the AMAs, the Miss America, the all kinds of specials with, you name it, Quincy Jones, Dolly Parton. You know, he's sort of the top live television director in the country, and he's also a producer, and he's been in the business for 50 years.
Wow, that's something.
He has a tremendous amount of, to say, you know, tremendous experiences. His book is written for two particular audiences. One, the general public who just wants to know what goes on in Hollywood. You know, how come Barbara Streisand ended up in his trailer at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion? And then there are people who are young, aspiring directors, producers, who are in graduate programs or undergraduate programs at so many of the universities around the country, who want to learn, you know, what he knows. And so it becomes a tutorial. And Jeff is, you know, excited to speak to students. He's been interviewed all over the place because of the name recognition. And he's now He's now finishing the audio version of the book. It's his voice that you will hear when you buy the audio version, which, by the way, is another interesting trend that has happened. More and more books are being put out as audio books because people love to drive and listen to a book, or they like to exercise and listen to a book, you know. I'm old school. I love to hold a book in my hand, underline the text, whatever.
There you go.
But many people, you know, many people are not like me. And Jeff has a fantastic voice. And so he, you know, auditioned for his publisher, which is Post Hill Press, which is a wonderful boutique press. And, you know, they gave their approval to his being the narrator of his own story. So he's about to lock it down, and I think that will go on article in about 4 or 6 weeks, along with the book, which is already out.
Have you seen some dramatic changes in your industry since you started? I would guess you have.
Well, as I say, the notion of actually ghosting a novel or a historical novel is quite new. What else is true is there are more and more ways to get yourself published. It's a very democratic process. On the other hand, there's not a lot of transparency, and you don't always have a totally reliable count of how many books and how many units you've sold. That's a little bit squirrely. The other thing I would say is that with the closing down of major media outlets, more and more journalists are looking for alternative ways to make a living, and they've discovered that ghostwriting is a wonderful way to make a living, not only financially, but also, if you want to call it, spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many, many more people out there who are becoming ghostwriters, so the field is extremely competitive.
Well, that makes sense. I want to take some time to talk about your book, and I'm looking at the clock, and there's two questions I really want to ask you, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you what those two questions are, and you can tell me which one you would like to talk about first, because it seems like this would be a good segue right here. I know you've published your first novel, All Sorrows Can Be Born, but before we talk about that, I'd like to know, since you're giving a lot of really wonderful advice, if you don't mind, what would be three of the most important tips that you would recommend to your client, your authors, when embarking on their memoir journey?
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's a wonderful question, and I love to give my answers. You could
Please.
Ask it of someone else, and you could get a different answer. When you embark
All right.
on this, they always take a notebook with you because you're going to have thoughts that come into your head. So you want somewhere to write them down. They may not end up on the page, but then again, they might. Another thing that's very important is to go through photo albums that will help trigger some of those stories that you're going to want to
mm-hmm.
include in your book. So I don't know about you, but I have 20-plus photo albums,
yep.
and any one of them could be, you know, a book, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Above all else, remember that everyone has a story to tell. It's important that you filter out those naysayers who's, you know, and that can be yourself, who say to you, you know, what have you got to say? You know, why should you write your book? So you need to turn that critic down and just do it, as Nike would say. The last thing I would say, which is really, I think, a very good tip, is that write this book as if you were writing to one person. Don't think about the whole universe out there that you're trying to reach, you know. The various age groups, men, women, whatever. Just
mm-hmm.
think about one person. Maybe it's your grandchild. Maybe it's a colleague. Maybe it's a boyfriend or girlfriend. Write the story to that person, and that will help ground you and make it not seem quite so daunting. It's almost like you're going to have a conversation with that person, and you're telling them important things that you hope will have meaning not only for you, of course, but for them as well. So those are easy peasy tips that I like to give.
You bet. So okay, you are charging for that information, okay? And I won't charge you for being on my podcast. But we do have some time left, and I'm really glad I asked you that, because I think that's really important. And I know when you were with me before, because I have your book in front of me right now, All Sorrows Can Be Born. And I, you know what? Born is not spelled B-O-R-N. It is spelled B-O-R-N-E, which I think is very interesting. And I would like you to spend the remaining time that we're together really talking about your novel. Tell our listeners about what this is about. It's quite
Thank
a story.
Yes, All Sorrows Can Be Born is based on my Japanese husband's family history. Most specifically, his mother, who was born right before the bomb went off in Hiroshima. And the second chapter of the book describes the bombing and how she survived, and her life as a young girl in Hiroshima. She then became, her aspiration was to be an actress and a singer. And unfortunately, she was turned down by the most important theater academy. And she was not able to take a second shot at it because she was sort of aging out. She was 17 and the cutoff was 17 and a half or whatever. So she took a job as a waitress in a tea room. She was very beautiful, by the way. And she fell madly in love with the tea room manager, who was very mysterious. And as luck would have it, he was a talented pianist. He had never taken lessons, but he played the piano just beautifully. And they fell in love over the piano. You know, you remember that there was a scene in a movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and what's his name, Bridges, where she's in a red dress and she's singing to him. She's sitting on the piano. And when I wrote that scene, I thought about Michelle, you know, and how she felt as she was falling. Oh, Jeff Bridges, how she was falling in love with Jeff Bridges. So they get married, and things are going along quite well, and then he is diagnosed with tuberculosis.
Oh.
And she's pregnant. And it falls on her shoulders to support the family because he's very sick and he has to be sent to a sanitarium. And he's in and out, and it's a blight because people in Japan were very afraid of tuberculosis, especially during the Second World War and afterwards. And her husband forces her to give up her child and to send him to live in the United States, in Glendive, Montana, which is part of the Badlands of Montana, with his sister, who had married a Japanese-American veteran who was fighting in the Korean War, and she had married him and come to the United States, and they couldn't have children. So he decided that I'll give my sister my baby. And the mother, whose name is Noriko, her hand is forced. She agrees, and then no sooner do they put this little boy on the plane all by himself than she thinks to herself, "What in God's name have I done?" Mm-hmm. And 6 months later, the father kills himself. He can't live with himself. He realizes that he's made this horrific mistake, that it's affected their marriage, it's affected his wife, Noriko. He's distraught, and she comes home from work one day, and she finds him, he's gassed himself in their little apartment.
Wow.
And my husband grows up in Montana. He decides he's going to join the Navy, and his plan is hopefully to be sent to Japan so that he can meet his mother after all these years. And as luck would have it, they do send him to Japan. Usually in the military, whatever you ask them for, they do the opposite. But in his case, they did send him to Japan, and the end of my book is their reunion and what that was like for both of them. And so the title, All Sorrows Can Be Born, comes from Isaac Dinesen, who the rest of that sentence is, all sorrows can be born if you can put it into a story. Mm. And so my belief is kind of, if you can write something that may be horribly tragic, it may no longer have quite the impact on you, mm-hmm. if you can get it on paper and you can shape it and you can look at it and you can contemplate it and you can have some perspective. And I went to Japan to interview
wow.
his mother, mm-hmm. which was an extraordinary experience. Book has now been out since 2021. It was published in paperback this past year. It has a readers discussion group. It's been selected as, you know, readers club pick of the year or whatever. And
nice.
It's a very sad book mm-hmm. in many ways, but what I am particularly proud of is that it gives the typical American reader a viewpoint of what the war was like for the Japanese people. You know, many books that we read about are always anti-Japanese, for example, or they make light of what the Japanese went through. But I wanted the reader to appreciate and understand the sacrifices, the pain and suffering that the Japanese people went through, just as we did during the war years.
Yeah,
so
I imagine.
That's my book. I don't recommend it as a light read.
mm-hmm. No, it's heavy. Mm-hmm.
It's heavy, but I think it's worth, you know, turning the page for sure.
Sure. Would you say that you have primary readers that follow you?
I hope so. You know, I'm
uh-huh.
about to embark on my second novel. And,
oh, good. Tell us about that. Ask you what might be next
yeah.
for you.
Well, again, it's based on, you know, something that happened in my life. In Manhattan on Madison Avenue and in Paris. It's a love affair that goes awry. I wouldn't call it a rom-com. Again, the settings are so important to me. You know, Manhattan and Madison Avenue and being a copywriter, which is what my main character is
mm-hmm.
absolutely fascinating because I'm a wordsmith myself, and I did do a summer internship as a copywriter on Madison Avenue. So I can draw from that, and I've been to Paris many times, and I speak some French. And, you know, I'm hoping that it will have a good reception when it's finished. It'll be published in 2526. It's going to take a while, but
wow.
You know, I've been percolating with it. You know, sometimes books don't. It takes a while to sit with it. I just had the first chapter published as a standalone piece in the Tulsa Review, so I've been given a little bit of encouragement. You know, that maybe
good.
This is a book that people will want to read. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting that you said you mentioned 2026. One of the questions that I was curious about is, you know, you're helping others write their novels, manuscripts,
mm-hmm.
all of that. But I was just wondering, you know, how long did it actually take you from idea to print to write All Sorrows Can Be Born? How long did that take you?
Well, it took me, let's put it this way, it took me 6 drafts. And I think
okay.
it took me 8 years to write that first
oh.
novel. Yeah. So I always say to people, you know, if you're going to write a novel that has a lot of heft to it, you better be in it for the long haul.
Sure.
Because it takes a lot of work. You know, it takes a lot of people looking at it and giving their feedback and so on and so on. I had quite a few editors along the way, several different publishing houses looked at it. You know, to birth a novel is hard labor.
I imagine it is. Have you ever been invited to do a TED Talk about what you do?
You know, it's interesting. I've had some book publicists suggest that maybe, you know, I should. I have not thought too much about it, but certainly I could speak for 10 or 12 minutes
and
inspire people, you know, to understand a little bit more and think about, you know, their own writing, what they want to get involved in. So, yeah, I've flirted with it, but I've never pursued it yet. But who knows?
You know, it's so funny. I'm a words person like you are, not at your level, so I'm not in any means trying to compare what I do to what you do. But I heard you say something, and I'm going to just point this out to you. I heard you say, I should, and I would rather hear you say, I could, because should sounds like my finger's out and I'm pointing at you. You know, you should clean your room before you go to bed, as opposed to, you know, if you cleaned your room before you go to bed, you could find your socks in the morning. So I'm just saying, you know, that I could see where that would be, you know, something that you would be very good at, because you speak well, you speak with passion, and you speak with knowledge. And I could see where people would love listening to your stories. And I'm just wondering, how do you find your clients and the authors? How do you find them, or do they find you?
They all find me. Some of them, you know, Google Ghostwriter, and my website comes up. And they may be interviewing me along with five or six other potential candidates. I have an agent who represents me.
Right.
And also word of mouth is probably, and doing the kind of thing that we've done here today. I mean, I so appreciate being given this platform, because who knows, somebody may be listening in and they've been wanting to write their life story or their memoir or whatever, and they've just never really thought about the idea of finding someone to help them go through that process. So I find, again, you know, word of mouth, client will recommend me to someone else. There are a number of different ways that people do find me. Yeah.
I noticed on your services, on your Write, and remember, everybody, it's WRITE, writewisdom.com, that you also have, there's writing coaches. Is that a service that you would provide to people that just really need some help in writing?
Yes. It's really great to be able to have someone come to me with a manuscript that they've already written and they need input, you know, and feedback. It's basically what we call a development edit, where they'll get a 5 to 10 page letter pointing out the strengths and the weaknesses of a particular project. And then if they want, we will stay with them and they will submit pages as they go along. And then we give them feedback on those particular pages. That's a slightly different approach than doing the actual ghosting, but it's something that is available to potential clients as well.
Well, I can see where if somebody has really thought about, you know, like you said, a life story, like what in the situation with your own book, that if somebody had a story to tell, and they just weren't really sure how to go about it. Maybe it is autobiographical. Maybe it's all about how come you love pelicans and you will follow them anywhere in the world. It could be about anything. The fact that you provide these kinds of services, is outstanding, and you're so easy. Your information is so easy to digest, and I think that that is another thing that makes for a very compelling reason why people would want to go to the finish line with you and go about doing this. And maybe they collaborate. Maybe it's, you know, you sit down with your daughter, your son, your whomever, your husband, and say, you know what, let's write about grandma, or let's write about XYZ, you know.
Exactly.
And I just so appreciate what it is you offer and how you go about doing this, Lauren, because clearly it's a passion. Clearly this isn't an obligation.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, but it has to be a passion because this is a, you know, this is a long-term commitment for two people to collaborate together. And if I
you
didn't
bet.
Feel passionately about it, I don't think I could get someone across the finish line. You know?
Well, and you know, let's face it, you're the one that's looking at yourself in the mirror in the morning.
Right.
And you want to be the authentic person that you've just presented to all of us today. And that's what I also respect about you, that you are the real deal. You're not just trying to sell something here. This is your passion in life. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me again and for sharing this with me. And for those that are out there that are thinking about, wow, I feel inspired now. I feel like this is something I'd like to consider. Now you have a resource. I know how to speak. You have a resource now, people, to contact Lauren and see what you can work out together. You don't have to live in the backyard to work with her. That's the beauty of the internet today. So I just want to thank you once again for joining me and sharing your story, because it's quite inspiring.
Oh, thank you so much. You made my day.
And by you saying that, did you see my hand go over my heart like I'm about to do the Pledge of Allegiance? Because you just made mine. So it's a reciprocal gift. And I'm just delighted. And, you know, we'll have to do this again when the new book comes out. But in the meantime, everybody, you're so welcome. And I just want to thank you once again, everyone. I hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. Tell your friends. This may be something that you're going to want to do this year and write a story. So I'm going to let everyone get on with the rest of their day like you, Lauren. And I'll be back. I guess I'll be back next week, which means we're already into May. I don't know where this year is going so quickly. But I'm going to let you get on with your day, and thank you once again. We're going to have another opportunity to do this, I'm sure. Bye
thank
for now,
you.
Everybody.
So
You're
much.
Welcome. You're
Bye-bye.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis,
mm-hmm.
back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like,
yeah.
Okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro. That's what it felt like.
Open your free iHeart app, search R&B Money Podcast, and start listening. Only on the Black Effect Podcast Network.